Go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, and welcome everyone on this Thursday to our webcast related to the changing world of readmissions and different strategies to impact those and ways to measure readmissions performance. We really appreciate you all taking the time today in between the holidays as we get ready for some time off to learn a little bit about how what Premier is seeing in the industry related to different initiatives for readmissions, and to learn about some different ways to think about measuring readmissions so that you can impact them effectively. And so we're going to go for about 40 minutes, and then we're going to open it up for Q&A. And we do have the chat function where you can ask questions, but we also have live Q&A at the end. And the session is being recorded and will be available to you via a link in a follow-up email you'll receive after the session today. You will also receive the presentation materials in that link when you receive that email. So you'll have that for download after the presentation as well. So with that, I want to introduce our speaker today, Joanne Clute, who is a senior director in our Clinical Client Services Division, who works with hospitals all across the country using data to impact areas of focus, including things like readmissions, length of stay, and general clinical improvement. Joanne has been with Premier for a number of years and has over 20 years of experience in clinical performance improvement initiatives at a number of different organizations. And today she's going to talk to us about the different activities and initiatives that are going on across the country related to readmission reduction, what's going on from a public reporting standpoint. She's going to look at some of the analysis that you could be thinking about internally at your hospital about how to look at your internal readmission rates and how to break that data down in different ways and things you may want to think about to help you understand how to reduce your readmission rates, and then some additional strategies, again, related to reducing readmissions. So those are the things we're going to cover today. As I said, please feel free to enter a chat question, and we will also, again, be providing the presentation and a recording of this session after the presentation today. You'll receive that in a follow-up email. So with that, let me turn it over to Joanne Clute with Premier to start her section of the presentation. So Joanne, let me turn it over to you.
Great, Brian. Thank you so much. So just when we think we can't take anything more on our plates, readmissions show up, and readmissions are a hot topic. They are very much on our minds as healthcare administrators and clinicians and the public as well. So why are they such a hot topic? They're very expensive, and I think this alone has gotten the attention of our regulatory agencies. So we know that they're expensive, they're costing our payers a lot of money, and so as we look at healthcare cost containment, as we look at healthcare reform, they are certainly well on the top of our list. If we look at our hospital and physician business models, historically they've been somewhat misaligned to really reduce the number of patients that are entering into our hospitals. And while we don't readmit them deliberately, they are part of our business, and it is very much a part of our culture to readmit patients when we feel they need to be readmitted. And so, again, when we look at making cultural changes and business plan changes, we certainly have our work cut out for us. It's very convenient for us to readmit patients when we look at the complexity of their care, when we look at the diagnostic tests or such as imaging or even procedures that might need to be done. It certainly is much easier for the patient as well to bring them back into the hospital so that we can have a very, very timely and seamless encounter of being able to do our diagnostic workup and evaluation. And because of that, it's considered very good care culturally. We look at our family members, we look at our patients and our colleagues, and appreciate that it is very conscientious to recognize when a patient needs to be further evaluated, and it's considered to be very appropriate for readmissions. So all of these things are really playing into the challenges and kind of that double-edged sword or kind of that disconnect that we have in dealing with with this population. As we look at readmissions, and I think, again, a reason that they have become such a hot topic for us is the fact that as we get into this world of patient safety and hospital-acquired conditions, hospital-acquired infections, we appreciate that many of these hospital-acquired conditions are resulting in readmissions. So when we look at that cost, we look at that inconvenience to the patient, those harm initiatives that we are putting in place are hopefully going to be able to reduce the readmissions, these unplanned readmissions. The other finding that we see with readmissions is really that fractured continuum that we deal with. We in our hospitals are looking at from the time we receive them at the point of admission until they are discharged. And while we do our best with our discharge teaching and we do our best with all of the rules that we have in place for getting our postoperative summaries dictated and out, for getting our discharge summaries dictated and out, we still are fragmented. We're fragmented from an electronic record perspective in many areas. We're fragmented from the pass-offs that we have of that primary care physician to the hospital, or perhaps those patients that don't have a medical home. And then on the discharge end, making sure that they're following up with their family practice physicians or the consultants that they need to see, and making sure that those providers have the information they need. So there are probably hundreds of touch points within this continuum that could lead to increasing readmissions and that also therefore need to be addressed as we look at how we can reduce them. We have other issues that complicate the care that we provide to our patients, such as some payers looking at the care that they will cover in an outpatient arena, or what they will cover in relationship to a major clinical condition. So again, sometimes these things can result. The best solution is to readmit them to make sure that we have that care done. And then we all know that we have social readmissions where, while it is not maybe the best business plan, it is the best thing for the patient to readmit them. So, unlike mortality, unlike length of stay, there are several different categories of readmissions. And one of the things that we're finding that we're working with our advocacy office in Washington and working with our research department is to really help educate the payers and the legislators on these different categories of readmissions. So we see here that there's five buckets, and we might be able to argue that there's really four, but I'm going to talk through them, and we can therefore appreciate the differences in a readmission is not a readmission. So we see the unrelated readmissions, where we have two admissions to an acute care facility, and they truly are totally unrelated. They have nothing to do with each other. They happen to fall within that 30-day readmission calendar, which is kind of the standard of what we typically look at, but they're totally unrelated. And there's really no onus as far as a connection or a responsibility. It's just the way they happen. We look at those in the light blue box that are really speaking to the normal continuum. And examples of those are an oncology patient where they might come in and they are readmitted for chemotherapy, or they come back in for a specific procedure. Those, again, are what we would expect and that we would want to have for those patients. The third category on the left-hand side are minor to major progressive type admissions. Examples of those would be a patient that has an AMI, and they are admitted for the initial AMI. They might have an interventional cath. They might have an initial stent, and then they will be readmitted for a second vessel when the dye clears, and they can come back in. Or it could be an example of where they have a lower GI bleed. We scope them and find the source of the bleeding. We stop the bleeding, appreciate that it is it is an oncology case, they need to have major surgery, we send them home knowing that we're going to readmit them within the next 7 to 10 days. And so those, again, are all either unrelated or expected and actually desired readmissions. On the right-hand side, we have the two categories of readmissions that we, I feel, are going to be held accountable for and that are a challenge for all of us. And the chronic disease category of readmissions is a challenge for every hospital that we work with as consultants. And examples there are heart failure, your COPD population, renal failure, pulmonary failure. Those cases that are chronic, challenging to manage. And when we look at that transitional care component, when we look at the resources that we have as a bridge for these patients, they sometimes are in place and sometimes not. They're sometimes so restricted when we look at how they can be paid and reimbursed that it becomes a challenge for us to coordinate these services for our chronically ill patients. And so, again, another challenge for all of us as we look to reducing readmissions when it comes to chronic diseases. And the fifth category are where I feel the greatest opportunities for our and our responsibilities are in looking at readmissions. And those are when we're looking at harm measures, when we're looking at postoperative infections and complications and so on. When we were almost there on the previous admission, but they come back in within 24, 72 hours with a progressive condition in place. And so I think that to the focus on the two categories on the right-hand side is where we do need to spend our attention. Readmission rates vary by state to state. This is, the data is a little bit old, but is what is out there. And we actually find in the majority of our facilities that the readmission rates are pretty much in line with this. We can see variation from the low teens to actually the mid 20% as far as overall readmission rates. And again, when we think about those five categories, if you have chemotherapy and dialysis as inpatients, your readmission rates are going to be much higher. They're expected and planned, but your readmission rates overall are going to be much higher. So I think already in just a few slides we can appreciate the complexity of readmissions and how we can measure ourselves against national rates and so on. We have to really be quite granular in our analysis. Okay? So research, it's been going on for many years, and there have readmissions have been a hot topic since certainly since the mid-80s. But there's been a resurgence in focus and interest on readmissions. And again, it goes back to really looking at the impact of readmissions on the overall cost of healthcare. We can see that 20% of Medicare-eligible patients are readmitted within 30 days, and 56% are readmitted within 1 year. So when we're looking at our large payers, regulatory agencies, again, it is certainly of interest. They vary considerably, as I've mentioned before. When we look at our top performers within our premier members, those top performers are sitting at somewhere between about 5% and 8%, and well below expected when we look at a risk-adjusted comparison. So that even widens this range of readmission rates even that much more. I mentioned it briefly, and again, we'll be talking about this through the presentation, but 50% of readmitted patients do not have an ambulatory care visit between hospital admissions. And this is that fractured care, that looking at the beginning and the end outside of the continuum. And then, again, very important are many both regulatory and proprietary initiatives around readmissions. I've included this slide because it speaks to the same DRG versus all DRG readmissions. And many of our hospitals and all of us really got in the mode of focusing on same DRG readmissions. And they have a place. But while this, I think, might be a little bit difficult to read, at the top, it really addresses the medical readmissions and the medical conditions and the primary, secondary, and tertiary reasons that they're readmitted. And we can see on the medical side of the house for our heart failure patients and so on, that is where the majority of those same DRG readmissions are going to fall. And again, it is significant to look at that, but it is a subset of all readmissions, the reason for all readmissions. We see in the bottom when we look at the surgical side of the house that there are very few same DRG readmissions. In fact, there's very few, if any, in most of our surgical conditions. And that when we look at the readmissions on the surgical side, we're looking at infections and complications coming back for pneumonia and so on. So while it is, we still need to look at same DRG readmissions for those chronic diseases, it is imperative that we open up and look at all readmissions. This slide shows the impact, and I think that the challenge that we all face. If we even just look at the small graph to the right-hand side, we can see the costs of healthcare are skyrocketing, and we will see this theme recurring throughout our presentation, where 10% of patients account for 70% of total healthcare expenditures. It is the rules of Pareto that are alive and well, the 80-20 split, and recognizing what we need to do as far as if we have limited resources, where we need to focus our attention going forward. I do think this is an impressive view to show the impact of the chronic conditions and those comorbid conditions. Certainly, again, closing the loop of looking at our chronic disease population. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to talk briefly about what is out there in the regulatory and other initiatives going on related to readmissions. This is out of we have consultants that provide us information on what is going on within the industry, and from a recent update, there are a couple of different views that are being shared and being considered in Washington, and one of them is this bundling of payments, and so it can be in the form of a couple of different ways, but the idea is that we will get we are used to now to a DRG bundle payment, but now they're looking at expanding that across the episode of care so that we would have a bundle payment for multiple hospitalizations, which we are, of course, all very certain will be less than we would get if for all of those separate admissions. So certainly impetus for us to be able to be efficient with all of our resources. This is, again, a recent update out of our Washington Advocacy Office, and does a couple things. It supports the CMS and Premier Hospital Quality Incentive Demonstration Project, or the HQID project, where we had a collaborative and now is in year six, and speaks to that as looking at that value-based purchasing and really looking at that whole pay-for-performance. And so we continue to build on these collaboratives. We continue to build on these basic concepts of cost and efficiency as we go through healthcare reform. And what this speaks to is to really look at the quantifiable impact on readmissions. IHI is instrumental, and again, a collaborative partner with Premier, and they are looking at the transitions of care, and they have an initiative called the STAR Initiative, which is the State Action on Avoidable Rehospitalizations. There are three states currently involved, Michigan, Massachusetts, and Washington, and we are working with our members in those states in using our tool to help them with looking at data and looking at their readmission opportunities. IHI is focusing on enhanced assessment of that post-discharge period. They're looking at the impact of discharge education and that key aspects of communicating with patients, and not only patients but with their families. And then again, that post-acute follow-up, we have significant disconnects and at that touch point. And so that is the focus of IHI. CMS already has readmission information out within their hospital compare data. This is an example of comparison of three hospitals, and we're looking at their AMI readmission rates, and we can see that some are doing better, some are no different, and some are actually worse than expected. When we look at the next slide, we can see their AMI readmission rate, and what strikes me most in looking at this is the small variation between what is different and acceptable. I mean, we can see that they're all very, very tight, but they're all still showing that they're no different than the national rate. When we look at the next slide on heart failure, again, we're seeing a very narrow range of readmission rates for these same three hospitals, but we can see that two are worse than the national rate, and one is no different than the national rate. So we're all in a very tight race here when we look at this. And what is significant is this data is out in the public. The challenge I think we all have is that this data is not current, and so we can see hospitals that are really working with their data currently and pushing that out into the public area as well. Thank you. Okay. What I've included is I've included the basic criteria that CMS is using for their 30-day readmission criteria. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I'm anxious to get into the data and look at that. The one thing I will say, though, is that all of this information is easily available on their website, and one of the challenges we find as we're consulting with our members in Premier is that our hospitals have a real desire to be able to make their data look exactly like what they are getting back from CMS, and it's almost impossible. And the reason for that is that we do not have the other hospitals that patients were admitted to. We simply have what we have within our own individual hospitals. In Premier, we are able to kind of expand that a little bit, but still limited. And so, again, our hospitals have a real desire, many of them, to be able to have their data mirror what they're seeing in the publicly reported data. We can get there pretty close with the definitions and so on, but again, we are limited because we don't have the same access that they do. Okay, thank you. Of their 30-day readmission criteria, of their potentially preventable readmissions, the one that has the most criteria around it are the AMIs, and they are looking at that, again, that minor to major, that sequencing of procedures and interventions within that population that are quite different than their heart failure patients. Okay? It's very nice. This came off of the QNET, and again, very easy to get to on the web, but you can see the granularity and the specificity of the criteria so that you are able to at least look within your own data and see how to create these populations. Okay. So let's go into looking at readmissions. Again, keep in mind we have those four or five different categories of readmissions. So let's go in and look at some information. Now, the information that I'm going to be showing is coming out of our out of Clinical Advisor, which is our clinical benchmarking tool. And this first view shows the readmissions for a facility and looking at across the x-axis on the bottom, these are the days since the previous admission. And there's a couple of things here. First of all, for all of the hospitals that we have done the same analysis for, this is the view that we see. We see the largest number in our first 7 to 10 days, and they diminish as we go out to that 30-day readmission point. And so we can see here in this example, 14% of the readmissions were readmitted within 3 days, and a total of 32% of all readmissions in that 30-day readmission timeframe were readmitted within 7 days. And this is what we're seeing across the nation for that readmission trend. And I feel that it's probably that 7 days or 10 days, some of the legislation is talking about 10 days, that we're going to be held most accountable for. This is another example. This is a comparison of three hospitals. And again, we're seeing that same overall distribution, but we're seeing these couple of spikes. And looking at this information in greater detail, we found out that those were dialysis patients that were coming back in. And so again, this is these are the types of things that can really change your overall readmission rate. Keeping in mind, we have to look at the planned and expected versus unexpected. Okay. This is speaking to that same DRG versus all cause readmissions. And so we're going through these fairly quickly. Keep in mind that you will be able to get a copy of this slide deck after the session is completed. And what we'd like to point out here is if we look down about our fourth row at septicemia, MSDRG 871, we can see if we look at the same DRG readmission, we have a total of 5 readmissions out of the 125 cases. If we go to the next slide, we can see that same population, septicemia, now has a total of 53 readmissions. So this is all-cause readmissions. This is a report out of Clinical Advisor. So we have two different comparisons here. We have the expected, which is the entire Premier database, and which is over 600 hospitals right now. And then we have a comparison to a selected peer group and many different peer groups from which we can choose. And that peer group then is a subset of our total database. So we can see both how we compare to the entire Premier database using risk-adjusted methodology and that comparison. And then we can also see what our populations look like compared to a top performing peer, whether it would be a top decile of all of our performers or specific to a clinical population or region or whatever. Another way of looking at it is looking at it by payer. And so in this example, we can see that we have, when we look at our readmission rates for our other payers, we can see that they're fairly high. Well, actually, they vary between. So our commercial is actually lower than expected. Our indigent, not surprisingly, is higher than expected. Managed care, a little bit lower. Managed care, almost the same. And then we look down here in the highlighted line of Medicare traditional, and we can see that it is lower than expected. We can also see, and I think it's important to look at the practice patterns of our physicians. And so on the left-hand side, we have the attending practitioners' numbers, and we can see their cases and their readmission rates. And what we see here is an example of some variation. If we look at the readmission rates compared to the expected and we kind of compare them back and forth, we can see that there is some variation, not a lot, but some variation, and they are some higher and lower. I think in this example, we do have the law of small numbers kind of working against us. But again, it's valuable to look at the physician variation. We like to look at readmission based on discharge disposition. In this example, we see our previous admission discharges and that discharge disposition of the previous admission. And then we see right next to it their discharge disposition for that readmission. And so one of the things that strikes us when we look at this view is that we have all these patients coming back in within 30 days, and yet when we look at maybe applying some additional resources such as home health, that really didn't occur in this example. And could that be an opportunity for them going forward to use home health more so that we have our home health staff out in the homes, maybe helping keep the patients out of the hospital? The other thing that we noted in this view of data is that there were 73 patients that were discharged from our hospital and readmitted to the hospital who died on readmission. So oftentimes in our analysis, we will look at them at this population to see, gosh, did we miss something, or was this really the plan or the for the patient or the plan of the family? So that is a very valuable subset of our mortality population to look at and to think about when we're looking at overall mortality opportunities. One of the things that is important is to be able to differentiate. In this example, we're looking again at our septicemia population, and what we see here is that not only did we have 72 readmissions, but 66 patients generated them. And so we have patients that are being readmitted multiple times within that 30 days. So again, an opportunity for us in our overall care management and care coordination for our patients. Probably the best way, albeit timely or time-consuming perhaps, but probably the best way to look at readmissions is to be able to look at both readmissions. And so in this example, this is at the patient level. We can see along the left-hand side, each one of these medical record numbers, MRN or medical record numbers, are a different patient. And we can see here where we have 2 8s, that's the same patient with different claim IDs. We can see that they had 2 admissions within 30 days, and that from it appears that they're probably unrelated. And the reason I say that is because that pneumonia is occurring almost a month later, or they're being readmitted with that pneumonia almost a month later after their hospitalization. In the second example, we have 2. They were admitted in December of 08, and then they're readmitted in January. And again, those 2 readmissions, probably unrelated, and we look at the actual timing of those, we can see that those are outside the 30-day. They would be captured if we were looking at a 60-day or 90-day. So again, just being able to look at both the previous admission and then the readmission is most valuable in working through our opportunities. Okay. Another way to look at readmissions are we getting a lot of bounce backs when we readmit them on Saturday or on a Saturday or Sunday? And do we have problems in getting those outpatient services engaged, or are we really missing clinical components of their care on discharge, causing them to come back in? And we're really not seeing that. Well, actually, we're not seeing that on the first one. The readmissions overall seem to be higher on Thursdays and on Mondays. And so when we kind of look at the Thursday, it really doesn't seem to be tied to that weekend. But when we look at our Monday readmissions, we can see that most likely there is some relationship of that weekend. And again, when we think back to that first view of trending down, it was pretty characteristic of a 7-day period for readmissions. This is another example of looking at a couple of different components. We're looking at discharge disposition. We spoke to this earlier. One of the things that we noted in this view of data is the low use of hospice. We didn't have any previously, and we had a very small use of hospice on the readmission. And we look at home health, and again, we see a fairly low use. And so our question is, could we have fewer readmissions if we were to deploy some home health? Okay, so let's move on to some recommendations. When we look at kind of realigning everything within our industry, one of the biggest challenges, but probably one of the best opportunities for us, is going to be looking at really realigning our whole business model for healthcare, and we are all but certain that will be coming. Legislated and payer-driven incentives, and so again, what we are looking at right now are the incentives for us to reduce readmissions. What we as an organization are looking at are how do we also negotiate some benefits and opportunities to help us with the key networking resources that we need, such as transitional care, to help us in our hospital environment be able to better care for these patients and move them through the continuum. Again, looking at the entire care continuum, focusing on what we need to do at the time of discharge to prevent these readmissions, to tie all of those communication pieces together with their primary care physicians or with the subspecialists that they need to see after discharge or our challenges. Better and more expeditious communication between touch points of the patient continuum. We have a lot of rules in place. We have a 30-day, many hospitals are looking at a 30-day time frame for when discharge summaries have to be communicated and dictated, but then there's the time that it takes to go ahead and have those transcribed and sent out, and what doctor are they going to be sent to, and the patient had a change of physician while a primary care physician while they were in the hospital. All of these things lend themselves to missing the mark of getting back to that physician that needs that information in time for that first post-discharge follow-up visit. So if we know we have 30 days to get the discharge summary out, and yet we're seeing that patient within 3 days or 7 days or 10 days, we've already set ourselves up for a gap in communication and coordination of the care. It's a challenge. And the same is true on the front end of getting all of that information as they come into the hospital. The other initiative is really to look at those, it's being proactive in reducing harm in the hospital so that we're not causing injury to our patients that will lead to a readmission. This is kind of a matrix of showing the differences between when we have a service-oriented organization versus an outcomes oriented organization. We can see the primary measure, we're talking visits, admissions versus outcomes, and so the incentive when we look at the outcomes oriented organizations is focused on keeping the patients out of the hospital and less about visits and bringing them back in. This speaks to that whole idea of timeouts and whether that timeout is between our pass-off of our nursing unit into EOR or our timeout is between looking at a discharge timeout. The key is looking at preventing gaps in communication and not assuming on anyone's part that some component of a critical transition in care has been left out. A lot of different initiatives are going on, but I think there's several common themes. And we look at what Kaiser Permanente is doing. We look at what Capital Health Plan of Florida are doing. Their focus and the VA as well, the focus of these three initiatives is really looking at that core group of population that is generating the highest healthcare costs for them. They might be generating the highest healthcare costs because they have extremely long lengths of stay, or they have tremendous numbers of comorbids, or they are frequent readmitters. But what we are seeing is that the focus of most initiatives around readmissions are looking at that key group of patients that really do have the highest cost related to their health care. When we look at what is really making a difference, I think our first focus is looking at discharge education. The research is supporting that alone is not making a huge difference, but that it really does require that relationship of not only the patient but their family. And so it is that touch point after discharge. There are many different models that are in practice right now. There are ones that are almost purely electronic, such as heart health and heart failure management, where everything is electronically based and tying back into the hospital, to outpatient clinics focused on these high-risk patients, to home health, to discharge coordinators that are actually going out into the homes. But again, it is a combination. It is a relationship of multiple interventions that seem to be making the greatest difference. So, a lot to deal with in our industry, a lot to add to everything else that's going on. But it's imperative that we learn more about what is working and what isn't working. We are actively, again, working with our research department in Washington, and we, within our own teams, our consulting teams, are working with our customers and our members, being able to understand and bubble up to the top those best practices. When we're looking at readmissions, again, it's not as black and white as a length of stay or mortality, and we do have to differentiate those planned and unplanned readmissions. It's important that we engage physicians and leaders to appreciate the complexity of everything that's going on and to be able to anticipate creating business plan scenarios of what it's going to look like and the impact of readmissions. And then really to look at what we can do overall for the overarching care coordination and care management of our patients. I believe that concludes our presentation, so if we want to open the lines for any questions.
Thank you. Web participants can submit a question by using the chat tool on your screen. Simply select to chat with the chairperson and type in your questions and then click send. Telephone participants can register a question by pressing the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. I will now turn the conference over to Mr. Brian Bowles to facilitate web questions. One moment, please, for the first audio question.
Thank you very much. And we did have one question come across via the chat, Joanne, that you may be able to address. The question is, what are the thoughts around palliative care initiatives for the patients with chronic conditions?
I think there's a huge underuse of palliative care, and it is an area. In fact, we were just talking to one of our members earlier today about use of palliative care and dealing with our patients, and more importantly, their families. We feel that it's a very good practice. It is a service and it is a concept even that is tremendously woefully underused. And certainly, when we look at our chronic disease, those palliative end-of-life care patients, or even palliative care in the idea of the appropriate level of intervention, it's a very good solution.
Great, thank you.
Our challenge in palliative care is how we talk about it and how we conceptualize it to our patients and their families. And I think therein lies the challenge of us becoming more comfortable and understanding how we can communicate that to our patients and their families.
Very good. Thank you. Operator, do we have any audio questions?
Yes, sir. We do have one question. I want to remind the participants on the telephone line that to register for a question, they have to press the 1 followed by the 4 on the telephone. One moment, please, for the question. And the next question comes from the line of Gail Judy with Fairmont General Hospital. Please proceed.
Yes, we have talked about using home health when our congestive heart failure patients are discharged, but part of the problem is, you know, the criteria for home health was that they had to be homebound, and a lot of them will not be homebound. So can you use home health anyway as far as you know, or is it reimbursed for them to make at least one visit, or is there any way around that, or we just couldn't use it?
I don't know that I can really speak to those constraints around the heart failure population. We have heard a lot of good examples of using cardiac rehab, outpatient cardiac rehab, for this heart failure population. That might be an option. The other option, again, is to look at an electronic system or even just an ongoing monitoring system. Another example that we heard, again, when we were talking to some of our members earlier today, is the use of a magnet and really that whole education piece for the patient, so that it is a top of mind reminder every day to review their care, to review their where they are with their weight and exercise, mobility, and so on, and for them to have those prompts. But as far as the constraints of using home health when the patients don't meet those requirements, I don't really know a way around that. All we know about are maybe some other options that help fill that gap.
Okay. Because I didn't know if maybe one visit could be covered anyway, or I didn't know if there was something out there. But that it just makes it hard to use home health if they don't, you know, meet all of the criteria.
I am remaining, and I think most of us share this cautious optimism that home health is going to be, that some of these things are hopefully going to change as we go forward, because constraints like that are a huge challenge. And if that is what is keeping us from being able to use home health, we are cautiously optimistic that some of these requirements and criteria will be changed going forward to help shift, again, that cost and efficiency into the patient continuum, out into the outpatient area.
That would be great.
I know.
Yeah, at least for one or two visits. Okay, thank you very much.
Absolutely, sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Operator, would you mind just repeating the instructions to enter a question? I know we had somebody who wants to respond on this particular topic. Would you be able to just repeat the instructions to ask a question?
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone.
Thank you. Just a couple other questions that have come across via the chat, Joanne. One is, what if a patient leaves AMA? Is that counted as a readmission if they come back? I would think they would be excluded, but you may not.
They're going to show up. They're going to show up as a readmission. In fact, that's one of the things, one of the categories of patients that we do look at. But they would show up as a readmission, and again, something that one of those subcategories that need to be evaluated secondarily to all of your readmissions.
Okay. One other question that came across is, and I've seen this in some of the legislation, but do we anticipate that as CMS considers not paying for preventable readmissions, do you think they're going to follow kind of the 5 buckets that you outlined earlier, or what have you seen related to kind of what's in the House and the Senate bills related to readmissions? I know they're a little bit different in each.
They are different in each, and the two categories that they're in right now are, they're differentiating at all between any readmission. So they're calling a readmission as a readmission. That, again, is where we are working with our research and our Washington Advocacy Office to help educate them, because there is a difference. And then the other category that we have seen are simply the unplanned, and that's how it's written, unplanned versus expected readmissions.
Thank you. And with those 5 buckets that you had designed or had kind of talked about at the very beginning, and then the data examples, those buckets are more kind of conceptual about how you would want to group patients when you are doing analysis on readmissions, as you think about the type of patient they are, not necessarily a defined category that's in a data product or being considered as formally as that. Those are more your buckets in terms of how you think about parsing out patients when you're analyzing them. Is that an accurate?
That's exactly correct, Brian. We find that it helps to kind of look at readmissions and be able to assign them into these categories. They all have nuances, and they all have some level of opportunity for readmissions, just to understand, you know, are we holding patients because we're waiting for an OR block time or waiting for a medication to clear? Are we discharging them home and bringing them back in? You know, are we readmitting all of our chemotherapy? Are those opportunities that could be done as outpatients? So each one of these have some opportunity for consideration, but for the most part, this is from a clinical perspective of how to start to sort through your readmissions.
Great. Operator, do we have other audio questions?
Yes, sir. We have a question from the line of Sandy Hall with the Mercy Medical Center. Please proceed.
Well, I was going to respond to the person that asked about having the home care visits. And what we're doing at Mercy in Des Moines is having our home care, having our heart failure patients have two home care visits. And the way home care explained it to us is if they go with the intent of making two home care visits, they can be reimbursed by Medicare. Most of our heart failure patients don't go anywhere the first week or so after they go home from the hospital. So they typically are homebound, so they meet the criteria. And our home care nurses are going out the day after discharge, reconciling their medication and doing some education. And then depending on the patient, they're going back in 2 to 3 to 4 days and reviewing, again, heart failure self-management. Now, if it's a patient that needs to be seen longer and meets criteria, they are staying in the home longer. They're putting in an electronic scale that sends them the daily weights to their computer system and such.
That's excellent. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. One other question through the chat, Jillian, that came through. One question was, given the majority of patients at their facility that are discharged to nursing homes, what do you think is the role or responsibility of the nursing home in carrying out that plan of care at discharge, which results, if not followed, in the readmission?
Well, ideally, the responsibility of the nursing home is to be able to carry out that the designated and requisite plan of care. We, I think, are finding more and more of our acute care hospitals reaching out to skilled nursing facilities, working with them and their medical directors in the management of the patients that they take care of collaboratively. We're seeing it both on the front end as far as transferring back in and managing those transfers more efficiently and appropriately. We're also seeing it with our hospitals really reaching out and working more closely with our skilled nursing facilities and medical directors. For our communities where we have acute care facilities with large numbers of skilled nursing facilities in the area, it really is a challenge. And some of our research is looking at what is coming back in from our skilled nursing facilities and again, out through the acute care continuum.
Great. Excellent. We're starting to run up on time. Let me do one last check here. Operator, do we have any other audio questions?
Yes, sir. We have one final question. It's a follow-up question from the line of Sandy Hall with the Mercy Medical Center. Please proceed.
Thank you.
Ms. Hall, your line is now open.
I wanted to address the nursing home patients, skilled patients. And, again, I'm a heart failure case manager, so, of course, that's what we're focusing on. But when discussing things with some of the medical directors of the facilities, they said that, you know, they may not know that. And it takes a while for them to get to know the patient history and whatnot. But what is helpful is when a patient is discharged from the hospital that has heart failure, if they could have the discharging physician write some diuretic parameters, so when the patient does have symptoms of heart failure, the nurse can go ahead and treat them according to whatever orders he has written. And also, we have also had trouble with them weighing patients daily. But typically if we ask them to weigh on bath days, which is usually twice a week, they can accommodate that easier than weighing them on a daily basis. Thank you.
Thank you. That was, again, great information. And the idea of working directly with the medical directors of our nursing homes, I think, is a critical point there.
Excellent. Well, operator, if we have, let me just confirm if we have any other questions.
We have no further questions at this time, sir.
Okay, great. Well, we're running up on time here, and I want to be conscious of that. I would like to thank everyone very much for your time and attention today, taking an hour out to learn about readmissions and how Premier is viewing that world and working with hospitals, and maybe gave you some ideas for what's going on and how to maybe start thinking about looking at your readmitted populations so that you can utilize some of these strategies and others to impact those effectively. Premier will be at IHI next week, so if anyone is going to Orlando December 6th through 9th, Premier will be there and have a very heavy presence. So if you make it to the exhibitor hall, we would love to see you there. I will be there personally, and if you're interested in learning more about any of the programs Premier has to offer from a data perspective, like the examples we showed today, happy to share that with you at IHI or one-off. You can see some of our contact information there. And please feel free to reach out to us. We love working with hospitals and really improving things like readmissions. In the follow-up email that you will receive after the session, you'll have a copy of the presentation today as well as a link which is will have a recording of this session which you can share with others. And you will also have links out to other sessions like this one that we've done related to length of stay management and the ongoing professional practice evaluation requirements from a physician reporting perspective. You're able to see those archived sessions as well. So thank you all again very much. I hope everyone has a happy Thursday. And if you have questions, please reach out to us. Joanne, thank you very much for the wonderful job today and for everyone's questions. So with that, we will close the conference. Thanks again, and have a great week.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.